Hello, listeners. Welcome back to another week of the Bullseye Podcast brought to you by AFI Advisors. This is Josh Shores, and I wanted to give a little disclaimer slash intro for this week's episode. We had the privilege of having Ryan Kelly on as our special guest. Ryan is a $150,000 scholarship winner, a debt-free college graduate, and a scholarship expert and coach. In the 11th grade, she began applying for a variety of scholarships while figuring out winning techniques and strategies through trial and error mostly. Now, Ryan shares scholarship opportunities and hacks on TikTok at ryan.kell and coaches families through the step-by-step process of finding, applying for, and winning scholarships in her signature coaching program called Get Paid to Go to College. Wish that was around when I was looking. So that's the great news. The bad news is we did do this via Zoom. We had everything hooked up and it was sounding great in our ears. And lo and behold, after we're done recording, our audio on the AFI side just sounds terrible. It bypassed our mics and actually recorded through our webcam. So I apologize because Peter and I are going to sound like we're in a little bit of a can. Ryan sounds amazing, as you'll tell. But I don't want the quality to throw you off. This is excellent information, and I want everyone to be aware of these college scholarship techniques that you can put into place. So without further ado, here is our interview with Ryan Kelly, the Scholarship Navigator.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Bullseye Podcast brought to you by AFI Advisors. This is Josh Shores alongside Peter Raber, President Grand Poobah, AFI Advisors, and we have a big day today.
We do.
We have the Scholarship Navigator, the one.
Yeah.
Ms. Ryan Kelly. Ryan, hello.
Hello. So excited to be here and chat about scholarships and finances and how it all intertwines.
Yeah, and to let everyone know, we are working off of a Zoom meeting. It's a little different for us. We see Ryan on the television. I was telling Peter and Ryan that I feel extremely fat today, seeing myself on the television. So I need to make some big life changes.
Nothing like a mirror.
Yes. Ryan, you are in Missouri, right?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that. That's like a forgotten land for me. I don't ever really think about Missouri. No offense.
See, that's what I love about it. It's beautiful, it's green, and everybody else forgets about it. So spring is in full swing right now, and the trees are blooming, and the birds are out, and it's just a beautiful, quiet place to be.
Are you originally from that area?
I am not. I am actually from far, far out west, Southern California, born and bred. So quite a big change, but really? I love it here. And I've been a little bit of a globetrotter since college, because I went to college in Michigan. Then I've popped around, and then now my husband and I have settled in Missouri, and it looks like this is going to be our home for the foreseeable future. But the great thing is, so much of what I do in terms of scholarship work and with families is all online. So I can be anywhere and talk about scholarships all across the nation. And that can be on social media or helping families out. So it's great to be anywhere and still be able to do that.
I got to ask, like, that trick, why Missouri? My mother-in-law was born in Missouri, so at least I've got some connection out there. She was from Springfield. But yeah, what took you from Michigan down to Missouri? Or was there another stop in between?
There was another stop in between. It was Colorado, which is okay. Where my husband's from. And then we settled on Missouri because that's where his dad was raised. His grandparents' house they built was here. And so we decided to buy that property and make it our own. And we love it. So just carrying on the family legacy.
I would have had a hard time leaving Colorado, I think. I feel like that would be a good place to, you know, set up shop.
You seem like a Colorado guy.
I think you guys would like it. It's a fun place for sure.
Although, spoiler alert, I've never actually been. I've just seen it on the map and YouTube videos and in movies, Dumb and Dumber, Colorado.
Yeah, I've been there.
Let me know when you go, and then I can give you all the tips of places for the best hikes.
Well, if Peter would give me some vacation days, I'd love to get out there and go visit.
You get plenty of vacations.
Well, Ryan, why don't you, you know, we know what you do, right? So why don't you tell everyone a little bit about what you're doing, what you have a passion for, and kind of what led you here?
Yes. So scholarships were really an accident in the beginning for me. It was a conversation that started with my parents when I was a junior in high school, basically, hey, we can't pay for college. We need to figure this out because we don't want to take out loans. And so my mom and I started figuring out how to find and apply for scholarships. And we made a lot of mistakes along the way, which I'm happy to share here and talk about because I really try and help families avoid those mistakes when they're getting going on scholarships. But I eventually won over $150,000 and graduated completely debt-free from college. And that was even though my family did not get any financial help from FAFSA. So it was during my senior year of college when I started getting calls from family and friends basically saying, we heard the news, you're about to graduate debt-free. Can you help us out? And so it snowballed and I started sharing my knowledge, my expertise, coaching other families through the process. And now it has blossomed into Scholarship Navigator. So I coach families on a small group level, how to find, apply for scholarships, write their essays. And then I post tons of resources online on social media about scholarships that are upcoming, tips that families can use, and especially try and guide families from the parent perspective. Because when parents are the ones who know what's going on, the scholarship process goes a lot smoother. I certainly would not be sitting here today if it hadn't been for my mom saying, this is what we're going to do. So kudos goes to her. And I love passing that along now to families and helping them graduate debt-free.
That was kind of where I found you before and with reaching out. You've got a very particular way about going for scholarships that I hadn't heard anywhere. I think I saw a TikTok of you. So, you know, the algorithm was working somewhere. And it's a very different style than what we hear about. And I've got a son who's about to be going into high school. He's finishing up eighth grade now. And you hear about the big scholarships. And if you don't get, you know, the big, you know, full ride from the school or whatever it is, you don't really hear about what I heard you talking about, which was really fascinating for me.
Yeah, it's so much all or nothing in the scholarship sphere. And I think that's really been boiled down to guidance counselors being very stretched thin. A lot of times families will go to guidance counselors and expect that they're going to have all the resources with scholarships. And these guidance counselors work hard, but they also have a lot on their plate. And their full-time job isn't necessarily scholarships. So a lot of families are left to their own devices. And we so often hear about the big scholarships, like you mentioned, or the full rides. And then it's tempting to think, oh, well, if my student isn't going to get that, then there isn't anything else. But that couldn't be further from the truth, because the majority of money that's out there that's a lot easier to win are these smaller increments of funding from third-party groups. And when you win that money, that follows your student wherever they attend. You know, that could be a scholarship from the local Rotary Club. And your student can use that money wherever they go to college. And so I put together a lot of those smaller scholarships because I knew I wasn't, quote unquote, good enough for a full ride. And I got some money from the college, but it didn't pay for everything. So when I pieced together these smaller awards, like you were just mentioning, that a lot of folks don't talk about, that's how I ended up graduating debt-free. And that money had the flexibility to cover the room and board, the books and fees, those things that will often set families back in debt because they're thinking about the tuition, but they're not thinking of all of those other living costs that come into play for their student to attend.
Those costs are huge. I sit on a local community college foundation that I chair, and we talk about the cost of attendance more so than the tuition. And we see a lot of students who have to drop out just because of an unexpected car problem or an unexpected childcare issue, or they need $500 extra to do XYZ that's going to keep them in school. And they're making the choice, well, do I feed my family potentially, or do I stay in school? So having that incremental smaller dollar amounts can make huge differences for some of those kids.
And you make such a good point because you're right. So often families or students are trying to pay for college on such small margins that those smaller scholarships can make or break it for them. And the craziest thing that I see too is that so many of those scholarships are ignored by students who think, oh, you know, $500, that's nothing. Even though that student has probably not even been collecting that money that frequently from even their part-time job that fast, right? But however, when they see a scholarship, maybe it's even, I've seen scholarships where they're $8,000, $10,000, and students will say, eh, that's not a lot of money. That's not worth my time. But that money goes a long way. And so when students and families see, oh, wait a second, that could bridge a lot of gaps, whether it's the books or the fees, or even you mentioned an unexpected car problem, that could mean that they could stay in school a little bit longer. And there's not a lot of competition necessarily for some of these awards.
Yeah, I believe that it's important to know, I mean, 500 bucks, that could be your books for a semester, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, that could cover that. So every little bit does count. And you had a trigger point earlier with me. I have a little PTSD with the FAFSA forms. What a nightmare filling those out. And I thought that my mom and I were just going to both have a complete meltdown filling those out. And it was so tedious and it was so much information. But I think it's important, you know, one thing that you speak of and you mention is, one, you know, families of all backgrounds can do this, where no matter where you're at financially, even if those FAFSA forms don't help, right? So it's important to know that. And I also think it's important for you to tell us, where can people find these scholarships at?
Yes. So I want to speak to your point about FAFSA first, because this can actually be one of the number one reasons that families do not move forward to pursue scholarships. So you're right. FAFSA is a nightmare. And it can feel very invasive, right? They're asking for so much information beyond just what your income is. They're asking for the assets. They're asking for so much information. And so often, middle-income families feel very trapped because they're not low income enough to qualify for some of those Pell Grants or that FAFSA aid, but they're not high income enough to pay for college. And that's that middle sticking point where I really try and reach out to families and say, don't worry, this is not the end of the road. Even if FAFSA tells you that they're not giving you any help, that doesn't mean that you don't have financial need. Just according to FAFSA, you don't have financial need, but you still have financial need because you can't pay for college out of your back pocket. So let's start looking for some of these outside scholarships. So Josh, this is where it gets to your second point of where do we seek out some of these awards? I really like to make the distinction between outside scholarships and inside scholarships. So inside scholarships are that money that's coming from inside the college, FAFSA, whereas outside scholarships are those third party groups that we were talking about, right? So I gave an example of, let's say the Rotary Club offers a scholarship, or a business or an association does. And so often with those opportunities, they're never asking about financial aid, or if they are, it's very generalized and open-ended. But so often families will see, oh, you know, this third-party scholarship, this looks great, but looks like they want us to include some financial info. And we didn't get money from FAFSA, so we're probably not going to qualify for that, so we shouldn't apply. I see so many families cheat themselves out of thousands of dollars because FAFSA has tainted their idea of what financial need actually is. And I cannot tell you how many families I've seen just go for those and say, you know what, we're at least going to try. And then they walk out on the other side with thousands more dollars. And I won scholarships I never even expected to win. So I always want to plant that idea for families, because I see a big challenge with winning scholarships is more what families self-disqualify themselves from, just as much as the scholarships maybe they weren't a good fit for otherwise. It's also ones they are a good fit for, but they think, it's not going to be worth it when it really can be.
What are some of the most unique places that you found these small scholarships? You mentioned Rotary, but I know you've mentioned on a number of the videos I've seen kind of some really places you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of my favorite ones, thrift stores. That one always surprises people. A lot of thrift stores. I see your faces. You're so surprised. Yes. I have seen so many families win scholarships from thrift stores. And not every thrift store out there has a scholarship, but a lot of them will because they're more community-based and they're fundraising and giving back. So that could be an assistance league or a Salvation Army that's in the area, but a lot of independent thrift stores. Or another one that maybe the name has come across families' minds, but they don't necessarily consider it as a serious scholarship source, are community foundations. Are you familiar with what community foundations are?
Right. Yeah, I am. Yes. I don't know if Josh is.
I am.
Yeah. Okay. And most families are not familiar with those. So for your audience, if they're unaware, these are those groups that exist in different regions and counties all across the country. You could just Google, you know, community foundation nearest to me. Not only do these groups offer events and resources, but so often they offer scholarships and they're like a liaison between the donors and the community. And so sometimes when you submit one general application through that community foundation, that qualifies you for multiple scholarships. I have had students win tens of thousands of dollars in scholarships just from the community foundations. In fact, one of my students, she got $60,000 just from that source. So when we start tapping into all of these different places, and just to name some additional places, churches, you don't necessarily have to be a member to apply for those, credit unions, utility providers, you name it, there are scholarships hiding under every rock. It's just a matter of looking for them.
Well, and I think that leads to the next thing of the overwhelmed parent who says, okay, well, it is all out there, but this has to be so much work for me. My kid's not into it. It's going to be, you know, X, Y, Z, all the roadblocks that people put in front of themselves. But when you talk, it doesn't sound like it's actually as difficult as maybe our minds make it seem like it should be.
You bring up an excellent point there, Peter. And there are a couple factors in this. Number one, I would say with the scholarship databases that are out there in this day and age that claim to make it so much easier, show you all the scholarships, they have really muddied the waters and complicated it because families get overwhelmed. They get on these big sites. Those are the first ones that are popping up on Google, typically like FastWeb or scholarships.com. And it's just this black hole of scholarship sources. And so families get lost in there. They get overwhelmed. They're the big ones that are very highly competitive. And families will get burnt out. But what I've found to be so effective is, hey, let's stop using those sites. Let's go for these smaller, lesser known scholarships. And the key thing about those is the applications are almost always asking for the same things because we don't want to be writing 50 different essays. Who wants to do that? What parent is going to motivate their kid to do that? I never would have written 50 essays if that is would have been what it was like. But what was most effective was actually reusing content. And that's another area that I see families accidentally self-sabotaging because they think that there needs to be original content every time. No, I had one essay that I reused 10 or 12 times that won me $65,000 collectively over the course of high school and college, one essay. And so I spent a lot of time perfecting that in high school, solid month, had a lot of drafts, but then that paid dividends as I was getting into college. So I always try and encourage families, number one, it's gonna feel the most challenging at first because you're getting all those pieces together and the answers and the essays, but it's not always going to be like that. You're gonna catch a stride and have that momentum going forward. The second thing that I wanna tell families, and you brought this up in terms of how do we do this? This can feel overwhelming or time consuming. Pick a scholarship time. So if you approach your student as a parent and just say, you need to work on scholarships, right. That is a very undefined request to students. And
you need to clean your room. That's what that sounds like to me. You need to clean your room. Yep.
Exactly. And students are thinking, you don't even know what you're asking me to do. And the parent is subconsciously thinking, yeah, I don't even know what this looks like. So very often nothing gets done. But my mom had a little bit of forethought and approached me and said, you know what? We are going to work on scholarships 1 to 2 hours a week. We're going to make it our scholarship time. We're going to sit down at the kitchen table. We'll make it fun. We'll have snacks. And you don't have to worry about scholarships the whole rest of the week. So we're going to treat it like a one credit class. And we're going to do that consistently, same time every week. I cannot tell you how much of a difference that made because I didn't feel overwhelmed by it. It was just, oh, okay, another part of the schedule. And that consistency over time, I credit that for our scholarship wins, really over the long haul. So I always try and tell families that because you don't have to be overwhelmed. It's going to take some hard work, but let's space it out so we're not burning ourselves out initially.
I think, you know, the other question we run into it two ways. We either have, you know, from our side, we have the grandparent or the parent who comes to us, either their kid is just been born or the grandchild's just been born, you know, how can I save for college? Or we get the, I'm graduating next week and I didn't save for college. How do I do something? What are the real time frames of when, like I mentioned, my son's starting high school next year. Some of these scholarships open that young, you know, so what's the best practices for starting to accumulate this stuff?
Great question. So your son can start on scholarships as a ninth grader. He could actually technically start now. There are some awards that are open. And I always tell families, start as early as you can. The earlier in high school, the better, because there are contests that are open ninth through 12th grade. And so if your student wins that money as a ninth or 10th grader, that money just gets saved for them until they decide where they're going to college. It's a easy thing. You know, the money's sitting there being held by the organization until they go. And so the sooner that families can start this process, the better, because that gives them the space, the time. Now, for families who are starting when their student is a senior, that's usually the most common time because they've been told to wait. That doesn't mean that they're out of luck. There are a lot of scholarships that are for seniors, but the key thing here, and this is one of the biggest mistakes that families make, is they stop right after their student graduates high school. They think, oh, that's all we can get. We got our money from the college, no more. That's not true. They actually have 4 more years of eligibility, and students can win scholarships all the way until they graduate college. I mean, I was getting scholarship checks still as a college senior, and there is so much money that's out there for undergrads. And again, the competition is a lot lower simply because people don't know that they can go for it. So for families who are like, hey, we're going to college right now, what do we do? I say, let's take advantage of all those years. You may not be able to graduate debt-free, but you know what? No worries. Let's at least knock 10K, 20K off that college bill so you have a lot less debt on the back end. So there's a lot of room and time to get those scholarships. And I more often see those limiting beliefs or those assumptions holding families back, because if they just dug into it a little bit more, they'd realize, whoa, we have a lot more space and time to do that. And then they can breathe that sigh of relief and then get to work.
Yeah, I was thinking through, because I have a 9-year-old, and I was just thinking, college seems so early right now in the conversation. We're trying to get, you know, through 4th grade at the moment, and
which is now the equivalent of 7th grade.
Yes, yeah, it's changing dramatically. But I was also thinking, when my mind shifted, so you can apply while you're young. Obviously, you just told us that, but what happens, let's say, when they're like, oh, you know what, approved, stamp. Are they just going to cut you a check? Are they going to Venmo you $500? Like, where does that, how do you collect that money? Where does that money go?
Great question. So there's usually two ways that the money is administered. The first is going to be via cash or check. So I see this more often with the smaller, more localized scholarships. So an example of this was one of my students. She won a scholarship as a 10th grader, and they gave her a $5,000 check. They trusted her mom was going to help her cash that into a savings account, and then that would sit and wait for her until she went to college. The second way that money gets administered is where it is held in trust by the group that's offering the money. So, you know, the donor group says, wonderful, you know, we're choosing you as the winner. We're going to hold on to this money for you. And then years down the line, when you decide to attend college or whenever you want to use it, let us know. And then we'll transfer that to your college and it will get deducted from your bill. And that's really how it works to have a really young student win a scholarship, because these groups know that. They know that that kid is not going to college for a very long time. So the money is just going to be ready and waiting for them. I had a scholarship that I was able to save for 7 years. So there's a lot of flexibility. If they're opening it to students that are younger and at that age, they know that they're going to need to be holding the money for a longer time. So those are typically the two ways that the money is administered.
Well, and when they give you a check, this is one of the things, college finances are so weird. You know, you talk about FAFSA forms. I don't think a lot of parents realize that once you submit your FAFSA, you actually get multiple levels of types of loans. And they're all individual loans. And then you get a private loan option. So, you know, per year of college, you could end up with 3-4 loans. You could end up with 16 different loans that have to get consolidated. But I know there's scholarships out there that can go directly towards certain type of loans. But one thing that we tell a lot of people is if you have a 529 plan, that's great. And you can actually take that early money and put it into the 529 plan. And we've talked about it a couple times. It's great if the grandparent or the uncle or whoever is actually the owner of that plan, because then it doesn't count against you for FAFSA. So if you do get one of these awards, or you really come out the gate in, you know, ninth grade or whatnot, and you've accumulated $5,000-$6,000, if it's in the student's name, it's a student asset and it counts against you. But if it's in the parent's name, it counts a little bit less than, you know, the student against you. But if it's in a trusted family member's name in a 529 plan, it doesn't even show up on your FAFSA. So there's all these little tips and tricks, and it's so overwhelming. So, you know, having people like yourself to help guide families through that.
Yeah, because no normal person's going to know that stuff.
No.
I mean, we've crossed this bridge a lot in just what we do daily, talking about our lingo, our verbiage. No one's just going to know how to necessarily manage their money or their wealth. So it's shocking that this is no different.
Yeah, it's not intuitive, right? Just like everything else, gotta grow up, learn how to pay your taxes, learn how to pay for college, all of these things. And there are tips and tricks to everything. And the sooner that you figure those out, the less stress you're going to have in the long run. And you make a great point about 529 plans. I had a family ask me this week, hey, you know, if we get a scholarship and my student's younger and it's cash or check, could we roll that into the 529? And yeah, you could do that. And it's very important, as you said, to be strategic about whose name the 529 is in, because you can't have joint ownership. Could be the student and the parent. And I have seen sometimes with the parents 529 that will count as assets on the FAFSA. Typically, and I don't know if this varies per state or if this is different where you guys are based, but there's a certain amount of that 529 where that's not going to get dinged against them. So they can save for quite a bit. But you even mentioned putting the 529 in another family member's name, like a grandparent or aunt or uncle. Could you speak to that a little bit more? Because I'm curious about that and how that would end up rolling over to the student eventually.
So this is what we've done in my family. I own my niece's 529 plan. She's the beneficiary. And then if something happens to me, my brother is the, I guess, successor owner. Okay. But it doesn't appear anywhere on her FAFSA, because outside family and 529 plans, you can change the beneficiary within immediate family. And now they're even better because of the new law that came through that long-dated 529 plans will be able to be rolled into Roth IRAs down the road rather than being stuck in 529 plans. But it's one of those things that our arrangement, and you have to have tight family, you have to, or whoever you're dealing with, because you are giving up control of that asset. Mm. Because I could technically rename the 529 beneficiary into my own kid's name, and my brother can't do anything about it. But it doesn't show up anywhere in their FAFSA calculations. And with a lot of our clients, because our primary business is wealth advisory, you know, we're not having a whole lot of clients who are qualifying for, you know, needs-based scholarships. But some who are on the cusp, especially when we're working with second generation and you know, you'll have a grandparent who's done really well for themselves, and they want to do this big gift into a 529 plan for the benefit of their grandchild, which is great. But all of a sudden, they've put themselves above those limits that you're talking about, and they get dinged on it. So if you put $50,000 into a 529 plan doing one of these mega contributions, you can mess your grandchildren some, you know, amounts up. And so those are kind of some of the little things. You know, if investment income can really affect FAFSA forms, especially when it's in the kid's name. So many of our clients want to do the best for their family members because they've been so successful in their careers, but they end up hurting them for the aid that they could get. So there are little things that you can do And actually what we're doing with my brother is, depending upon how much my niece, who's currently in college, uses, there will be a leftover amount in that 529 plan, because his profession allows for some cost sharing because he works in a college system. So, you know, there's discounted tuition for things like that. I'm actually just going to buy it out from him. So I will give him the dollar amount that's left in the 529 plan that he can then use for non-college expenses. And I will rename the beneficiary to my children.
Wow. What an incredible hack and system you've got going there. That's phenomenal.
So, and it allows for, you know, because especially, you know, a lot of our clients worry that, well, I want to save for, you know, they tell us we have to start from the time they're born, because if they want to go to Harvard or they want to go to UVA or whatever it is, we're going to need all this money to do it. And then they get there and they're like, well, I want to be a plumber, which is now paying more than, you know, most things that you could get a degree at Harvard for, or whatever it is. And they don't want, you know, to use it. So they don't want to trap their assets in some of these college vehicles. And so it, there's just little things that you can do to make it a little bit better.
That's fantastic. And thank you for sharing that, because those are the things that, as we said, they're not intuitive, but that is making such a big difference. And it's helping you, it's helping your brother, your niece, everybody collectively, and you have this game plan. And that's really how I like to approach scholarships as well, because it all ties together. It's a game plan. And we don't have to feel overwhelmed or feel like we don't know what's going on. When we get the right pieces into place and build that out, that formula that others before us have done, it becomes achievable. It doesn't have to be guesswork. And of course, finances can be tricky because there are so many things that we feel like we have to get right. But I think when we divvy it up into these different buckets, you know, this is really the college bucket that we're talking about, and the 529 goes in there, and the scholarships and the FAFSA, but there are tricks of the trade for each of those pieces, and we'll get that bucket set. And then you don't have to worry about it. You just keep moving along with the plan. So I really love how these elements that you're bringing up from that financial advisory and wealth perspective really do go in hand with families pursuing scholarships as well.
Yeah, and Ryan, I'm getting a cue from my producer that we need to start wrapping it up. Fun fact, I'm the producer.
Your brain turned back on. We started talking too many finances.
I came back. But I want to, I think it's really important to say this. So if I'm hearing you correctly, would you agree or disagree that the bulk of your method, your goal here is to, one, start early, and two, stay consistent?
Absolutely. You boiled it down perfectly.
That's what I do. I want to surprise you with something. I always like to do a thing called the lightning round, where I really put people on the spot and I don't warn them about it. And I let it simmer, which is what I'm doing right now. So you're getting all squirrely and like, oh no, what's he going to ask me? So let's just take a moment and let you ponder on what's about to come.
It's never bad. It's always stupid questions.
Excited.
Okay, well, let's do it, because you look super nervous, right? So question number one, what is one word that you think folks around you would use to describe yourself? And just to let you know, that we chose lightning round because we thought it'd be like quick and fast and just bam, to the point. So if you could hurry, that would be great.
So let's do a lightning round with both of you.
No.
Your words first, and then I'll say mine.
No, let's not do that.
Peter, what's yours?
Long-winded.
Mine, tolerable.
Tolerable. Better than other things.
Okay, Ryan, you're up.
Probably creative. I'm always trying to find something that I can make something else out of. My laundry list of hobbies is a mile long. Foraging, making bread. I am always trying to figure out how to make something from scratch and reverse engineer something. So that's usually what I'm spending my free time on. And if anybody ever comes to visit, they're like, what are you doing here? I'm like, oh, I'm just trying to figure out how to make my own laundry detergent from scratch. No big deal.
So you're a fellow ADDer. So that's good to know. Yeah.
Okay, great. All right. Question two, what is your all-time favorite cereal?
All-time favorite.
And yes, we will judge you based off of what you say.
You probably will for this one, because I don't eat a lot of cereal, but when I do, my absolute favorite thing are They're these cornflakes that are sweetened with fruit juice. It's pear juice. And it's so good. It's so good. Get some dried strawberries on there.
Phenomenal. What in the Whole Foods are you even talking about right now?
I know. I just see. I like that better than the sugar ins. But growing up, it was probably going to be Honey Nut Cheerios. Oh, Honey Nut Cheerios always taste great.
I still have to go back. All right. So we've got cornflakes. Are we pouring fruit juice on top of them, or do they come pre-sweetened with like a monk fruit or something like that?
No, pre-sweetened with pear juice.
Okay.
Yep. Oh, I'm none of that monk fruit or stevia business. Just straight fruit juice for me.
Because I mean, it is a college show, so orange juice over cornflakes is something that may or may not have happened. You know,
it's not too far fetched.
Yeah, I don't have milk. Sounds like a TikTok trend. Yeah.
Okay, really simple. And I think this is actually a great question for you, because it sounds like from earlier in our conversation, you're well traveled. So here's the thing, beach or mountains?
Okay, growing up, I would have said beach because I grew up in Southern California, but I really love the mountains now. Backpacking, hiking, you just can't go.
All right, good answer.
Beach is always the right answer.
Peter always picks beach. That's why I was looking at him. I figured he was going to say something about it.
I guess if you want to be near the crowds, yeah. But in the mountains, you have all the solitude.
No, see, now that, I will say, where we go, it's an empty beach. It's us and, like, it's a small beach town that there's no tourist attractions, so nobody goes, and you get the beach to yourself. And so, yeah, that's solitary great. Beach. But I would give you solitary mountains over crowded beach, because I don't want to be near a crowded beach ever.
Yeah. Peter wants
Josh,
to be alone.
Josh, what about you?
Peter wants to be alone. I am choosing mountains. I do want to say something about the cereal, because that was just, come on.
You've gotten surprised the last two times we've asked
really
the cereal question.
I'm going to have to just stop asking it, because it's not doing what I thought it would do for me. But. You know,
I think in the 21st century, people's cereal tastes are changing. It's getting a little more creative out there, more options on the market, you know?
I don't know that pear juice cornflakes is really the direction we need to be going.
Yeah, just as you had to keep me on my toes, I have to keep you on your toes.
That's fair. I'm gonna say, you know, probably Cap'n Crunch.
Okay. You're also wrong, but that's okay. No, I'm Frosted Flakes. So it's kind of the same thing. It's just I like mine more processed and worse for me.
Yeah.
So
hold the pear, please.
Yeah, hold the pear. Although I will say that's what my afternoon's going to look like, is trying to find the cereal.
There you go. And see, you know, this is from, like, what cereal would I prefer now to cereal as a kid? I gave you both options.
You did.
Cornflakes.
You did.
Either works.
Well, thank you for that, Ryan. Thank you for joining us here. This was a lot of fun. I do want to maybe think about reevaluating our conversation in the future, because I think there's more things we can talk about into this subject that we didn't get to hit, obviously, because of a little bit of a time constraint. But everyone, thank you for listening. This is the Bullseye Podcast, brought to you by AFI Advisors. Ryan, we're going to send you a koozie.
Well, thank you.
I want to see it everywhere. I want to see the koozie everywhere, all over Missouri.
Take it
all around. But thank you for joining us, and thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Bullseye Podcast. Do you want to sponsor the show? Or maybe be a guest? Contact us at connect@afiadvisors.com to get the conversation started. Thanks for all of the support.